Hey, friends, it's that time again. My name is Kenny Jang. You are here for a fantastic conversation. We're going down deep into the rabbit hole of the Metachurch. I've got Dave Adamson here next to me. Welcome to the show, Dave. How are you doing?
When you said we're going down, Kenny, I thought you meant we're going down under. I literally thought that's what he's going to say. He's going to say we're going down under to Australia.
Because you're Australian, I should have make a... I know this is one of your pet peeves, or this is what every Australian pet peeve is, right?
It's
talking about either Outback Steakhouse, your national cuisine, or right, saying I'm going to put a shrimp on the barbie for you, one of those things.
Well, only for it's only cliched for Americans who are over 50, because otherwise. Everybody under 50, nobody knows what a shrimp on the barbie is. Nobody knows where that comes from. When was that ad run, Kenny? That was like the 80s.
Probably.
That was pre-YouTube.
Absolutely. Well, thank goodness for the internet, because we're sitting here on two different continents, literally across the globe from each other. And today we are here for the second episode of this season's podcast, where we're going to explore different aspects of Metachurch. And literally, this is what we're talking about, using video to connect with each other. Today, great conversation. I think that we've focused on YouTube. There was a phrase that you say, YouTube your church, is something mm-hmm. that everybody should be doing today. And we're going to dive deep. We're going to go down deep, down under with Dave Adamson. First, before anybody gets too far into this troublesome mess, why don't we share for the few that remain and don't know who you are, Dave, give us a little bit, a quick elevator pitch of who you are, and tell us about this book, Metachurch, that you just came out with.
Well, I was the 8th online pastor in the world back in 2008 when I joined a church in New Jersey, where you are right now, called Liquid Church. They were a forward-thinking church that decided, hey, we need to get some online stuff happening. And so they hired me from a TV station over here in Australia, where I was a sports reporter for our version of ESPN, Sports Center. And I moved my family in 2008 to New Jersey, of all places. Crazy. That's where you and I first met, Kenny, in New Jersey, other side of the world. And then 2013, I moved down to Atlanta to join North Point Ministries, where Andy Stanley is the lead pastor. And I was the online and social media pastor there for about 7 years. And then I've since moved back to Australia. And the book that you're referring to is literally everything I have learned. People ask me all the time, how long did it take you to write that book? And I say, it took me 14 years. Because in those 14 years, I had to figure out online church, build ministries, fail immensely, dust myself off and try again. And obviously it took me 14 years to get surrounded by some key people in the online space who helped make a lot of what I did possible. And I've included a lot of them in the book, in chapter 18 of the book, which is my favorite chapter, because I didn't write any of it. People like yourself and a lot of really smart people got involved to write that last chapter.
I love it. I feel like, I should know the page numbers that I'm on, but today we're gonna talk about one of the topics you do tackle in the book, and that's YouTube. There's a whole protocol, and there's all this complex workflow type of approaches that we're doing. But I just want to, go back to do not pass. Go. Let's start at square one. And just address this question, because I think people get that churches need to be on YouTube, just in this like larger sense, but it's almost like when we talk about my church, that it's not my own thing. Like it's not something that we are ready to do. So why don't we just start with square one? Why should churches be on YouTube? Like, what's the most compelling argument? I think there's a list of, there's probably a laundry list that you can order by height or alphabetical order, or there's like 6,000 reasons why people should be thinking about putting churches on YouTube. But if you had one argument, one discussion point to go in to a pastor and talk to the leadership, what would that be?
Well, you know, it's funny when Jesus was asked to sum up all of the Hebrew Bible into one commandment, he said there were two. And so I just want to follow Jesus and say there are two. Okay. Can I just say there are two? I can't whittle it down to one. The very first one would be this, and you know this, and your audience is smart and they know this as well, that YouTube is the second biggest search engine in the world, owned by the biggest search engine in the world. So that alone should be a compelling argument for why churches should be there. Because if churches want to have their content found, if they want to be discoverable online, then YouTube is the place for them to do that. It's where people are going to find answers for absolutely everything. When somebody gets on online and is searching for answers to the big questions they're facing in life, or the small questions they're facing in life, everything from fixing your car to fixing your marriage, people go to YouTube for that piece of content. So that's one of the reasons why I think churches should be on YouTube. It just makes them more searchable. If I had to choose what that second one was, you know, following that Jesus model, I think for a lot of pastors and a lot of especially senior executive lead sort of pastor level, yes, they're looking for robust analytics, robust data around what they're doing online to see if it's even working. You know, and because YouTube is driven by Google Analytics, the analytics that you get from YouTube a second to none, especially on when you consider all the other platforms that you could be streaming your services on. Let's just pick Facebook, for example. The Facebook analytics do not even compare to what YouTube allows us to get. YouTube allows us to see where people landed, like where they came from to land on your live stream. Did they come from social media? Did they come from a website visit? Did they come from searching a topic on Google that led Google to put up your live stream of your service or your old message that you've got up for on demand? Is that what led them there? It's able to tell you how many people clicked on your thumbnail, like the picture that you have that promotes that video on your YouTube channel. It tells us all of those little bits of information. Plus, and this is the good and the bad of the analytics on YouTube, right? You can watch the video with a live graph telling you exactly where people dropped off. Like, yes, you can literally go back to the word that you said that caused everybody to drop off, or the song that your church streamed that caused everybody to drop off. You can go back and track that. But likewise, you can also track where there's a bump in that graph where people came back in to watch. And so you can start to build your content around what people are actually watching. And especially if you're a pastor who really believes that context is king online, and you are trying desperately to reach the people who live within driving distance of your building, YouTube analytics are able to tell you exactly where people are watching from and for how long they're watching. So all of those things alone make YouTube the place to go for live streaming of services.
I love it. Data, that's what makes things happen. It allows decisions to happen. And, you know, we sometimes joke on our team that Facebook doesn't use the word analytics because they know that they can only stretch the truth so much, and they call it Facebook Insights, right? Like, they don't even call it analytics.
Yeah, insights. It's high like level insights.
Yes, it's like insights is like maybe the end of elementary school, middle school grade data, and then there's Google Analytics, which is like collegiate or college PhD level. Yeah, that's a great response. I think for many ministries, right? Like, I think the problem though is it just seems so daunting for churches to actually get on YouTube. And then there's the camera factor, feeling like, "Oh, I need to be on camera," and they feel like they're exposed. Yeah. And who else are you able to, you know, get on camera, etc. What would you say, Dave, like in your experience coaching churches, what's the first real practical step that churches should realistically, like, if they really want to get into YouTube beyond posting their sermons?
Yeah.
Right. Like, I think that's the easy one. The easy one is everyone is posting the sermons, and obviously that's not actually in their favor, right? It's not, I don't want to go off on a tangent after. So let's answer that question later, but what's the first step? First step a church should take realistically beyond posting their sermons, what should they do on YouTube?
Well, I would be suggesting the thing that they could do that doesn't It doesn't take much time. It doesn't require them to hire an editor or a video producer or anything along those lines. The first thing you can do is just make sure that your channel is as optimized as it can possibly be. And these are little things that you can do. Simply, like what I noticed a lot, Kenny, is when I'm, you know, working with churches or with nonprofits or with ministries, and I do an audit of their YouTube channel, the first thing I notice is there are simple little pieces that they've left out and just haven't thought about adding, because they're assuming that YouTube is just a place like Vimeo where they can just deposit all of their videos for safekeeping. But if they take, you know, if they take just 2 hours to optimize their channel, they can double their views, they can double their subscriber rate, they can double their viewer retention. And I don't just say that arbitrarily. I've literally worked with churches and ministries around the world, and within 30 days, they've doubled in these areas by making some simple adjustments. And those adjustments include things like making sure that the About tab is completely filled out, that your church has put all the contact information that you have, all your social media handles, your website URLs, those little things, making sure that your cover image on that homepage includes information about your church. Now, I always say that churches should have one of two things on their banner, their cover image on YouTube. It should either be a picture of the front of their building, so that if your goal, your context is try to reach people who live within driving distance of your building who've never been before, they can see the front of the building and know that they're in the right place when they eventually show up. Or it should be some information about your church, whether it's your mission or vision statement of what you're trying to achieve as a church, or hey, we post new content or we live stream our services at this time. Like, though, make it into a TV guide. Remember the old TV guides you used to get where you would, You know, when you're growing up, Kenny, I don't know if I even have them anymore in New Jersey, but you know, you'd get the
talk about the 80s memories.
Yes, you'd go, oh my gosh, A-Team, it's on Wednesday at 8 o'clock. Yep. And you would highlight it or circle it. Like, that's what your YouTube banner can be. Hey, live streaming services at 9 a.m. every Sunday and replay that. You know, you could do something like that on your banner as well. Then there's little things that if you go into YouTube Creator Studio and you start diving a little bit deeper, you can include hashtags, you can include tags, video channel tags that allow your YouTube channel to become infinitely more searchable. So again, just as an example of that, some of the churches, when I was doing this for North Point, for example, I made sure that the channel tags included things like Andy Stanley North Point, North Point Community Church, North Point Ministries, but then also common misspelling. So Andy Stanley, but without the E in Stanley, because some people might not know it, or North Point as one word, or North Point with an E on the end, both of which weren't right, but I knew a lot of people were probably typing that sort of stuff in. So when you go through and just add channel tags, that makes a huge difference to making your church infinitely more searchable. The other thing is also you can add geotag location. So when you type in a tag, type in the town, type in the state of your church. So I would type in North Point, Atlanta, Atlanta Church, like little things like that, but then also narrow it down to the suburbs. North Point, Alpharetta, North Point, Forsyth County. You know, we would do things like that as well to make sure that the people who are living within driving distance could find our content when they needed it in their moment of greatest need. So even little things like that make a huge difference. And we haven't even talked about repurposing or getting into video content, doing extra video content midweek. These are things that only take a few minutes to do that can make a huge difference to the viewer retention of your YouTube content. Plus also you add playlists to your homepage. Like, all of these things don't require a lot of experience working with YouTube, and they certainly don't require any video experience. These are something you can give. You could probably give somebody in your high school ministry the job to do this as a volunteer. It doesn't require you to be a huge church. It just requires you to have a little bit of time and one or two people resources.
That's fantastic. I do think that many people, again, miss that optimization part that you're talking about. And there is a basic regimen, a checklist of things that you should be taking care of. Like, correct, you said, the cover image and all that kind of stuff, that it's kind of like, let's get your house in order first. And what you're saying is that actually provides a bunch of traction up front.
Yeah.
That it's not that you have to post 1,000 videos or get on YouTube Shorts every single day for a year before you actually get that traction.
Exactly. It's just requiring that little bit of time and that checklist of stuff. In fact, I've got checklists. And if I haven't done it already for Church Tech Today, Kenny, I'm more than happy to make that available so that you can post that as a link.
Absolutely. Well, they should pick up MetaChurch, the book, because the MetaChurch has a bunch of stuff in there. In fact, some of the exploded diagrams of more of the workflows and stuff like that. I think that really, can you open that book and show people who are watching this video one of those workflows just to show? Because I don't think that's typical in a book, or at least in the church genre to begin with, and just to show how tactical, practical you have been in showing people to give them a little bit of fodder to work with so that they can make it their own afterwards.
Yeah, so a huge part of what I wanted to do with the book, Kenny, was not just write a philosophical idea of what Church Online should be. Now, I do have a section where I talk about why churches should be doing online, and I try to provide a theological argument for it and a philosophical argument for it as well. But then I wanted to get down into some nitty-gritty stuff, not in the way of, hey, here's the latest YouTube hack or here's the latest Instagram hack, because let's be honest, 3 months from now, the algorithm changes and suddenly this book is obsolete or a new platform comes along. And so for me, it was more about the way of thinking about it. And so, yeah, I broke it down to like little things like this. I'm not sure if you can see that, but little things like this where I take an exploded view of somebody's discipleship journey through a church that's leveraging both online and offline, which is really why I call it meta church, because that idea of meta, that word meta is a prefix that means to transform or to change, as in the word metamorphosis, or it means to go beyond, as in the word metaphysical. So the idea of a meta church is a church that is transforming its model to go beyond Sundays, to go beyond a time slot, to go beyond a location. And so I try to include little things like this, which is a breakout, what did you call it? A breakout view, exploded view, I think you called
exploded
it.
Exploded view,
of what somebody's journey might look like if they connect with the church physically, but they still leverage some, if they connect with the church on site, but they still use some online tools to access deeper content, to become disciples, or all of those sorts of things as well. So I do that with just about every channel in a whole bunch of different ways, from podcasts right through to YouTube and everything in between.
Awesome. The next question I have is, I think, going to be a hard one, because once you convince the leadership of a church that says, hey, we need to be on YouTube, that we need to actually prioritize it, and then they see the light, they see the potential that says, hey, realistically, there's stuff that we can do to get out of the gates. Yeah. But then if you want to commit to it, you know, let's be honest, Dave, video shooting and editing and publishing, tagging, category, all that stuff is not something that you can just do on your lunch break. That literally can become something that takes up a whole media team that roles and responsibility at some point.
Yeah.
How can a church that's making these first steps, how do they tackle YouTube without having to hire more staff? Because I think if I can figure out how to coach the leadership team to actually see some of the fruits before risking the investment in human capital, then they might be able to actually say, you know what, we either need to reprioritize our budget our priorities, or raise more money, you know, put into the Christmas offering. But I think out of the gate, how do they tackle YouTube without hiring more staff, or is it impossible?
No, I totally think it is possible, regardless of the size of your ministry. Again, a lot of what I tried to write in the book is, obviously, when people hear that I came from North Point, they assume, well, you know, it's a mega church, so it's got a unlimited resources, unlimited budget, which is not necessarily true. But I tried to write a book from the point of view of any size ministry, any size church. And I've been parts, and you know this as part of my story, I came from a church that on the best day had 120 people at it. And we were still leveraging this sort of thing just simply by applying ourselves and having a strategy built around it. The thing that I always say to churches of any size, and in fact, you know, it's funny, I just got off a phone call, a consultancy call with a church in Michigan that has 14 campuses. And they're starting to do this now with a very small media team. What I keep telling them to do is to repurpose on purpose, to take the content that they're currently creating, the content that they're currently streaming on a Sunday anyway, that 30, 35, 37 minute message. And one of the best things you can do on YouTube is, yes, live stream it to YouTube, then yes, post just the message, but then also have somebody on your team, whether that's, you know, a paid staff member, or give somebody a volunteer opportunity to do this, because I'm sure there are, teenagers in your group who can use Adobe Premiere or something along those lines, and get them to create a 4 minute version of that message that you preached. That might be a highlight thing. It might be one specific point. It might be one specific story. But by taking that and editing that and posting that midweek, like on a Tuesday or a Wednesday or a Thursday, what that does is it creates this other piece of content that goes out. Yes. But then you use YouTube cards, YouTube end screens, and the YouTube description to point people to the full length version of that message. This is a step I feel like we miss in church world a little bit, but the YouTube world has understood this very, very clearly, right? Mm-hmm. We post these, you know, a study was done that shows that the average length of a message or a sermon in a church in the US is 37 minutes. So we post this 37 minute piece of content, yet the average length of a YouTube video is anywhere from 4 to 11 minutes. And we wonder why, hey, our viewer retention dropped off after like 5 minutes. Well, the reason for that is people are used to watching these 5 minute videos on YouTube. Now, I'm not saying preach 5 minute messages. That's not what I'm saying at all. But you can take that video that you've already created, take out one point or one section and include that as a separate video. And then again, use the YouTube description, that piece of text underneath, like essentially a caption to the video, to point people to the full length. You can have an end screen, which is like after the video is played, a little graphic pops up and make sure that you point people to that full length. In fact, YouTube allows you to embed the thumbnail into that end screen so that people can just click on it, or use a YouTube card, which, you know, just for context, that's the little thing that pops up like this right here, a little graphic pops up and it says, if you'd like to watch the full length version of this message, click here. So it gives people these opportunities to take steps in their journey with you as a church. So for example, this is the interesting thing to me. A lot of pastors will preach a message on, I don't know, let's say it's a relationship series, right? And it's how to improve your marriage. For example, that might be a series you do over 5 weeks. One of those messages might have one point in it that just says, hey, do this, husbands and wives, do this for each other, you know, whatever it might be. You could take that as the one little piece and you could title that something along the lines of how to make your marriage 25% better today. People are searching for that piece of content. And if it's the right length, people watch it, they like it. And if you've provided all the steps for them to get to the next bit, then they can go and watch that full length thing because you're actually answering the questions that people are asking on YouTube. So that's a really good way that you could do it. That doesn't require a lot of time, doesn't require a lot of resources, and takes the content you're already producing to drive traffic to your longer form content. It's as easy as that.
It's a great starting point for a conversation, I think, for a church team to start to think about what does it actually look like to improve YouTube.
Dude, it's so important to me. This side of things is so important to me because it's so easy for churches to. I'm literally losing my voice over how passionate I am about this.
I love it. Well, that is a foray into that conversation of YouTube. We'd love to continue that. And actually, Dave and I have been thinking about responding to some of the comments that we've gotten in from you, the listeners, about YouTube in particular. We're thinking about pulling together a boot camp of maybe even going through that initial checklist of optimizing your channel. So if you're interested in learning more about the potential events that we're going to put together, I want you to email me, kenny@churchtechtoday.com, and let me know what you think about that and where you are on the YouTube journey so that we just get a sense of what the interest and need is out there. And one of the things that we're very committed to is this video format helping more churches really grow in that aspect for the digital ministry. So Dave, next time what we're going to do is I think we have on deck for the next episode conversation about video, but in a different format, not YouTube, but church online, right? Yeah. Really trying to figure out how to have that engagement factor. And there's actually a question that I think that just to tease the audience is the question of suggesting that churches should actually stop streaming their worship online.
Yeah.
So let's totally talk about that next time.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I totally think that that stopping streaming your worship, the and obviously we're talking about the musical portion of your service. If you stop streaming that, you would get more views and more viewer retention. Wow. And potentially drive more on-site attendance.
Well, if that isn't a tease for the next episode, I don't know what is. So we'll leave it there. Today we talked about YouTube. Again, if you want to reach out to me, let me know where you are on your YouTube journey, and we'd love to figure out how we can help resource you even further. Kenny@churchtechtoday.com. Make sure to pick up the book MetaChurch wherever books are sold, online or in person. And we'll check out here next episode of the Church Online Podcast.
Well, I hope you found value out of today's conversation. This podcast is made possible by our friends at FaithLife. FaithLife has been using technology to equip the church to grow in the light of the Bible for 30 years. Since 1992, FaithLife has developed a full suite of church management tools, academic study resources, smart digital books, and Logos Bible software, all part of its integrated ministry platform that automates tasks and simplifies workflows. For more information, visit faithlife.com. Till next time, remember, be social, stay social.